Time for an intervention? Well, we continue our look at what's happening with our coral reefs. A new report by the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine says current efforts to manage stressors may not be enough. Bob Richmond, director of the Kiwala Marine Lab at the University of Hawaii and co-author of the study, talks about why there's this growing sense of urgency.
The result was a pretty extensive report, close to 200 pages, that identified 18 different kinds of interventions across four broad categories, some of which are kind of ready to go. Others are going to have a ways before we feel comfortable with them. Some are pretty far out there. Others are things that people will probably feel comfortable with. But the idea was to be pretty inclusive of all options on the table. And interestingly enough, part of the guidance when they commissioned this effort was not to put cost into the equation. And the reason for that on the science side was the fact that things like gene sequencing that, you know, even 5 years ago was costing hundreds of thousands of dollars or more is down to a couple thousand dollars. So they're taking into account that technologies are changing and along with it, so are costs. So they asked us to be as creative as we could to be able to examine all options on the table and kind of, in to misquote the movie The Martian, to science the heck out of it to find out what we can do.
So there are short-term and long-term fixes, I guess. What are the short-term things we can do?
Yeah, so again, part of the guidance was we all recognize that, you know, step number one is we've got to reduce stressors. So that's understood. The issue is that even if we were to stop the stressors today, and, you know, one of the examples I give is that, you know, giving up cigarette smoking is a good thing, but if you've got lung cancer already, that's not enough. And so if we were to just stop the decline today and kind of have the goal of leaving coral reefs in their present state as a legacy for the future, I and many of my colleagues would argue that we failed as a society. So the issue is not only how do we stop the continued decline, but how do we restore as much as we can of what's already been lost? So in the categories, we've examined everything from genetic and reproductive interventions. What can we do? Some of the wonderful work that, for example, Ruth Gates was doing until she unfortunately passed away recently was on the cutting edge of managed selection to try to breed for corals that have certain characteristics such as resistance to temperature in response to climate change. That's one end of it, and people are quite comfortable with the ideas of managed selection. That's been going on for thousands of years in agriculture. You take characteristics of different strains of plants, like corn, and then you select for ones that grow well under various conditions. The other way of approaching it is to not make new ones, but rather look for what's already out there. And Hawaii is interesting. We have a number of the typical stressors at the local level, sedimentation, runoff, coastal pollution, overfishing that leads to overgrowth with algae, especially in a world of nutrients. But we had a very unique one here. Some may remember the molasses spill we had in Honolulu Harbor. And so for many of us, that was a unique way of killing corals. I never had any idea that there actually were pretty excellent coral reefs in Honolulu Harbor. One would expect that no self-respecting coral would live there, but there were corals that were thriving.
That was so interesting that you folks were able to find out that even in a degraded environment, what we thought was a degraded environment, that these corals were thriving.
It was kind of a surprise and a shocker to us as well. Several of my graduate students were the first ones that were able to get on the scene when William Isla, then the chair of the Department of Land and Natural Resources, contacted us and asked for help. And we have videos of, you know, what were extensive reefs there far beyond anything we would have thought. And so it was interesting. Part of the argument on behalf of what happened with the spill was, well, these are harbor corals and they don't really matter. And it was quite the opposite. These corals living in the harbor, when you think about it, they're exposed to just about every stressor that you can think of. Heavy metals from anti-fouling paints at the bottom of ships, oil spills, major temperature changes, a lot of urban runoff every time it rains. And yet there were corals in there that were thriving. So, you know, one idea is to try to select for super corals, and that is to selectively breed, take a coral that's doing really well against temperature and see if you could cross that with a coral that's very good against, say, sediment or other pollutants. The other way is to go to these marginal areas like Honolulu Harbor and pick up the corals that have already gone through all of the selection and then see if you can work with them as a stock material to go forward. So in the genetic and reproductive interventions, it's everything from the managed selection to managed breeding. One idea was to take a look at collecting egg and sperm during these spawning events and to try to enhance the number of larvae you can produce. There's some interesting work going on actually at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology on coral cryopreservation, being able to freeze sperm, and that would enable you to do crosses from much greater distances. You might be able to take sperm from a coral from American Samoa in the tidal pools there and cross it with eggs from a coral from Guam or Palau. That was extremely good against changes in ocean acidification. Once again, it's not a matter of should you do these things yet, but rather what are all the options that are out there.
Now, when I last saw you, we were listening to Professor Jennifer Doudna talk about gene editing, and we had a discussion about, gosh, what could we do with coral?
Oh, absolutely. And so the idea of CRISPR-Cas9, which has again been in the news recently, is the fact that you first need to identify what the genes are that you're looking for and what those genes do before you can even decide if you want to make a designer coral, if you want to be able to do some gene editing. So again, that's one of the issues that was on the table under genetic manipulation. The fact is that CRISPR-Cas9 is an effective system, and that's where you begin to get into the issues then of ethics. How comfortable do people feel? Certain things, there's a category called physiological interventions. And one thing that people have found, some work on exposure to elevated temperatures tied to climate change, is that if you raise the temperature of corals initially for a very short period and drop it down again, they're actually more resistant to the next time the temperatures come up. So it's called a pre-exposure. In other cases, because corals have a relationship with single cells of algae that live inside, it's not just the animal part of the coral, but it's their plant symbionts, that you may be able to change those to those that are a little bit more resistant to temperature. There's even things like antibiotics. Corals have disease, and in the Caribbean, it's been really devastating in areas of Florida and other parts of the Caribbean where coral disease has wiped out a fair amount of reef area. Are there antibiotics that can be used, or even things like phage therapy to control the bacteria that are tied to these diseases? And then there's a number of things that could be done at the environmental level. In terms of, again, climate change, can you find ways of cooling the water down rather than work on the biological side, work on those physical things that are beginning to cause corals to bleach at larger levels? So it was a really interesting committee to be on. There's a total of 12 people, 10 from the United States and 2 from Australia, and each one of us has a degree of expertise in some specific areas, but more broad experience of trying to work back and forth. There was a lot of input from managers, too, to understand what their willingness is to be able to try different things. And in a place like Florida, there's areas in Biscayne Bay, which is one of the national monuments, where the good reefs are at 3% coral cover. The bad reefs are at 0.05% coral cover. And when I was first told those numbers, I said, oh, somebody made a mistake in this place, the decimal point. And it was, no, it's for real. So when you're at that level, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do that's wrong. And I think the main consensus coming away from this is that inaction is the absolute wrong action.
Right.
Moving forward, then, it's looking at all these different interventions that are out there and then beginning to select those that could have the greatest positive impact in the short term and those we still need to do more work before we can take a look at a longer-term fix.
So we need to intervene now because you say we're running out of time.
Absolutely. And once again, it's one of those situations where, you know, initially when I started working on coral reefs back in the 1970s, 1974, so 44 years ago, you know, I had the luxury of being able to see Caribbean reefs that were at 70 to 80% coral cover. I went back and visited some of my study reefs that I studied in the 1970s, and they were now down from 70 to 80% coral cover to between 2 and 5% coral cover. I never would have expected that in my professional career, to see such an incredible loss. So the reality is that it's not only the spatial area that's being lost, but the rate at which we're seeing these losses as well, which means we really need to step up. And as I mentioned, you know, just stopping the rate of decline is insufficient. We really need to look at how we're going to turn things around and begin to restore genetic diversity, restore species, coral cover habitat. And so there's quite a challenge there. But, you know, in the midst of all of the doom and gloom that we talk about, and again, with, you know, full You know, nodding to Ruth Gates and her passion is the agreement for a lot of us that we understand the coral reefs are severely threatened, but they're not doomed. And I think that's an important message that came out as well, is that there are a lot of things that we could be doing and should be doing, and that it's really up to us to ensure that there's a legacy of reefs for the future.
Dr. Bob Richman is a director of the Kewalo Marine Laboratory for the University of Hawaii at Manoa and co-author of that study. And again, he does believe while our reefs are threatened, they are not doomed.